Welcome to the Parentpreneur Accelerator Podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan.
Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Oxford-based mum, Jessica Ashley. Jessica worked for a corporate estate agent for 10 years before setting up her own estate agent business called Amelie's Estate Agents when her maternity leave came to an end. And in this episode, I'm really looking forward to going deep into what it's been like to go from estate agent employee to owner of an estate agent, and how easy that transition has been, and some of the challenges with that. But also go deep into Jessica's business, which is a really interesting one. So we'll be looking at the ethos behind what she's created, and how she's provided an estate agent with a difference, particularly in an industry that is one of the classically sort of hated or at least stereotyped industries. Be really interesting looking to how Jessica's doing that differently, and also how Jessica manages her time in an incredibly demanding industry with requirements around viewings and meeting outside of normal office hours and so on, alongside family life. So Jessica, thanks so much for joining me.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, good, and really interested in particularly some of the details of your business, which we'll dive into. But let's start a little higher level with what inspired you to set up your business and move out from working as an estate agent and instead create your own?
To be honest, I'd worked for a corporate agency for about 10 years, worked my way up from a trainee to a manager. And what I personally found was that the higher up the ranks you moved, the less of the stuff that I enjoyed you got to do. So for me, I love going out on viewings, and I love doing valuations and meeting people and helping everyone through the process. But the higher up you seem to get, it was all about meetings and target setting and that sort of thing. And that wasn't the aspect of the job that I enjoyed, to be honest. And then obviously when I had my little girl, looked up nursery costs and the amount I would work, and I just thought, I'm gonna set up on my own when she was about 11 months old. So yeah.
Fantastic. And how easy or not was that? Because when you say, oh, so I just decided to set up on my own, you know, it makes it sound as easy as, so I opened a lemonade stand at the end of my road. But I suspect that the world of estate agency has its fair share, or perhaps an unfair share, of obstacles in doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly obstacles along the way, and I probably could have gone about it in a completely different way. But instead, I just went for it. I started the very same day my little girl started nursery by leafleting, literally pacing the streets, leafleting. No one knew who I was or what I was doing. I had a laptop and a desk in a serviced office. And there were so many obstacles along the way. And I think probably the biggest one is being from a corporate background. I didn't realise how many things I was actually sheltered from, i.e. designing the marketing, IT issues, the cost of things like Rightmove is astronomical. So there were loads of things, really, that, if I'm honest, I hadn't really thought about. And they were just hurdles which I kind of went crossed when I got to them. And I think it's probably good to do it that way, because now that there's absolutely not one aspect of the business that I don't know inside out, because I've had to, you know, the estate agency side of things was absolutely fine, But all the other bits that go with it, as I said, like marketing and stuff, and budgeting and all those other bits that you don't think about, I've had to learn along the way. So a lot more to think about than I actually thought when I decided I was going to start up.
Absolutely. And of course, that's a common challenge for a lot of people, particularly those that kind of come out of a job and set up a business in that area that they were working. Because of course, for those people that can decide they're going to do something completely different, there's kind of a, they have an awareness that they don't know because they've not been in it. And so they probably work through that kind of those kind of gaps in the knowledge, whereas you say you probably went in sort of oblivious to some of those things. If you Absolutely. Were advising someone else who was saying, oh yeah, I'd like to set up, you know, I'm an estate agent, I want to set up my own estate agent business, or indeed I'm in any kind of corporate role and I want to set up my own business that basically does what I'm doing, what could you have done differently? So, you know, and therefore what should others do so that they can learn all those things and have that as part of their plan early on, rather than have that as a big, surprise later on.
I mean, within reason, I would be more trusting. And it's really interesting now because I actually get together with other independent estate agents that I get on with and that I trust, and that we're going through the same hurdles at the same time. And I probably would have just sat down with them in the beginning and said, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Okay, of course, there's an element of competition there, but you know, most people want you to do well, and other independents generally want other independents to do well, because that's good for everybody. So, you know, and I've had people come to me since and say, what did you do? How did it go? And I'm more than happy to sit down and you know, have that conversation with everybody, to be honest. So I would just seek advice from people that you trust that are in a similar industry. Would be my main piece of advice.
Yeah, fantastic advice. I think, and I really like the point that you make there around the kind of the trusting piece, because I think particularly for new business owners, there's this thought of this, there's this idea of, oh, I need to keep my idea secret. I can't tell anyone. I certainly can't discuss the business with any competition or anyone that's in the same area or whatever, because someone will steal my idea or you know, by knowing about me, they'll be able to take evasive action. And actually, that's super rare, of course. You know, it's far more likely that people have kind of got their own thing issues to deal with. In fact, I can't remember. There's a book where there's a suggestion that you can prove this by take your best idea and try and take it to a big business that you think would be perfect for it, and watch how impossible it is for you to try and get it on their radar. Never mind for them to then execute it the way in which you would execute it. And it's so I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, speaking to those people, getting that advice is absolutely key. I mean, obviously, on the flip side of that, you have to go your own way and create your own things that are specific and unique to you. One of the things that that stands out perhaps about your estate agents is kind of, we'll come on to some of the core principles, but let's start off with the name. The keen listeners will have noticed that the business is called Amelie's Estate Agent, but your name's not Amelie. So where did that come from?
You know what? I toyed around with names for a very long time. And what it boiled down to was, why was I doing this? And at the time, it was to be able to be flexible with my time, to provide my daughter with all the things that she needed. So it just became a really obvious choice to call it Amelie, because that's my daughter's name. And actually, when there are days, you know, not so much now, but in the early days when you feel like giving up or something goes wrong, you know, it just is a constant reminder of why you are doing it. And my little girl, you know, she's much older now, but she absolutely loves seeing the for sale boards with her name on. You know, and I think that the one of the values of the business is that it is friendly and family orientated, and I make no excuses for having a child and not perhaps being able to do certain appointments at certain times. But people know that from the outset.
Yes.
And I think people feel, I guess, like they're helping a business in some way by supporting an independent business that genuinely is independent and local and has the same sort of values as them.
Love it.
Yeah, that was really important to me.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that I also really like how you've kind of highlight, it's like actually people quite like supporting businesses like this and helping other people.
Oh,
and so on, and it which goes against, I think sometimes there's a commonality for new entrepreneurs and small business owners to think, oh, I need to create something that's completely scalable, and therefore, and by scalable means no connection with me at all, so as a result I'm going to create an estate agent called Cube or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like it doesn't work that way. Like, you can, you know, there are loads of businesses that start with a very clear focus on one person. You can still scale even without that. And and of course, you know, examples like Joe Malone's business that Joe Malone has sold, but it still has Joe Malone's name. It's, you know, it doesn't really matter. And of course that it's a problem and a thing that you can address when you get there, so much more effective to really pick a name that chimes with your ethos and what you're looking to do. Tell us more about
I was going to say people are really interested, because sometimes people haven't done any research on our business. They may have just called us out through recommendation or a Google search. So when I turn up and they realise that my name is not Amelie, they're really interested to know, what's Amelie? Where's that name come from? And then it gives you an opportunity to sort of tell your story,
nice.
I guess.
Yeah, really good.
And again, the amount of people that go, oh, well done, that's fantastic. You know, I think that the market shifted massively over the last sort of five or 10 years, where people genuinely do want to support a small business, because 9 times out of 10 you're going to get a much better service, whether that's, I don't know, buying double glazing or you know, choosing an estate agent. I think if you know it's a bit more it's a smaller business, you are so much more likely to get a personal service, and I think that's what people want these days.
Yeah, completely agree. And so obviously we've kind of heard a little bit about the story and where that came from. As a result, how does that then kind of translate to your customers? What are kind of the core principles that you have in your business? I mentioned at the intro that the world of estate agency has got a lot of stereotypes and bad feeling generally. So how have you kind of designed your business to overcome that and stand out?
I mean, to be honest, even since I started the job back when I was 17, 18 years old, you know, my dad even said to me then, oh, what do you want to be an estate agent for? They're horrible people. And that always stuck with me, actually. So with this business, it's just trying to step as far away from your stereotypical estate agent as possible. So I never wear a suit, for example. I turn up, I'm a woman, which again is not as expected. I have big curly hair. So straight away, I think that puts people at ease, because what they're expecting and what they get are two different things. And I think probably the main difference is because I'm with people from the very beginning, and not everybody's move is a happy move. You know, some people are getting separated or someone's passed away. You know, there are so many different circumstances that can be quite stressful that do result in having to sell a house or buy a house. And actually, I'm with those people from the very beginning until the very end. So, you know, I am attached to those people. You know, they get a hug when they leave, because you've kind of spent 3, 4, 5, 6 months being at the other end of the phone, being a point of call for them. And I think just really making it clear from the outset that I'm going to take care of everything. You're not seeing me today, and then when you ring the office, you can never get hold of me, or you're dealing with other people. If you've got any questions, just making sure people feel so comfortable that they can pick up the phone and have a conversation, you know. And sometimes it's not even house related, it's just advice on other things. But I think being that support seems to be the biggest factor. And when it comes to, you know, not just sellers, but doing viewings, and, you know, we moved house quite recently and we bought a house. The amount of viewings we went on where the agent knew nothing about the house, nothing about the vendor situation, basically opened the door and said, look around. You know, that's not how you get your vendor the best possible price, but it's also not how you help someone who's maybe new to Oxford or buying their first house. It's not how you help them either. And I think wherever we sell a house, I always make sure that I know about the area, I know about the house, I know what the service charges are, when the boiler's last serviced. I give people more than enough time to have a proper look round. And if buyers want to have a second view, that's absolutely fine. You know, we don't rush people into decisions. We don't force people to take offers that aren't going to work for them. You know, we're in a position where absolutely I have to sell houses. You know, I've got a daughter who does dancing and gymnastics and swimming and, you know, all the rest of it. You know, I do have bills to pay, but at the same time, I don't have to sell houses at any cost. And I think with a bit of patience in this market, houses are going for good prices, and, you know, you are able to make things work, but there's definitely an element of patience there, which I know certainly when I worked for a corporate, it was more about just getting a sale on the board at any cost, and that's not working for the vendor, in my opinion. And then we also just keep everything local, so if people need help with their mortgage or with finding a solicitor, we have local people that we recommend. But if people have found their own, absolutely fine, you know. And I think, again, with your corporates, there's the element to, you know, we're not going to put your offer forward until you've seen our mortgage advisor, you know. And it's very forceful, and that's something that I really, really hated about my previous job. You know, we do all the bits that normal estate agents do. So, you know, we do professional photos and floor plans and premium listing and all that sort of stuff. But we want our vendors to know that we're invested in them. So we don't take any money up front. If we don't sell a house, even though we've paid out for the photos and all the marketing and everything, we don't charge anything, because we've not done our job effectively, you know. And I think, again, that's a bit of a problem, because there are some agents that will, you know, take all the money up front, and then actually if they don't sell your house, they've not lost anything. The only person that's lost is the vendor, and again, that puts them in a really horrible position. So, you know, I've babbled on for a while, but it is just making sure that the vendor feels like they know what's going on, they're in the loop, they're not out of pocket, and we are invested in them to do what we said we were going to do.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think what I love there about is the kind of passion that you clearly have for the service, the care that you provide the customers, and how clear you are with that. I think it's really interesting, demonstrates how you can kind of take any edge and any part of a service or a product and kind of go heavy there. I mean, there's some brilliant guidance on this from Seth Godin about, if you Google, for those listening, Googling Seth Godin Edgecraft, where he basically suggests taking a particular, some aspect of something that customers care about relating to a service or a product. And in your case, that kind of investment in them and caring about their outcomes, and take it to the extreme. Because, you know, equally, we could be having a conversation with a estate agent who says, for me, it's all about the photos. It's the visual. That's what you buy it on. Or maybe it's all about the, you know, the margin. It's, you know, we make sure that you get the absolute best price you can. And this is how we do it. Or, you know, we do it. It's all about flexibility around you. We don't want you to have to clean up every so often and deal with it. And it's like, you can take any particular edge of what people care about here and create a really strong business around it, as long as you're clear on your, you know, who your customer is and what you're doing for them. So I really like how you've got that kind of clarity on what people often experience and how you've then overcome it. In the early days, how did you kind of, I mean, you mentioned leafleting. Is that how you got the message out? How, you know, what's worked for you to get the first customers? Because that's often the biggest challenge, particularly as if you're coming out of a corporate role. It's very common to have contracts, etc., that mean that you can't continue to work with any of your previous clients. So how did you get your initial customers, and how long did that take?
Do you know what? It was a slow process, I have to say. So the difficult thing is with things like Rightmove and stuff, they're very expensive, and you pay out that fee whether you have no houses or 100 houses. So we had a presence on there straight away with some of the advertising and stuff that we did. But the first few sales did come from leafleting. And I look back now and they were awful leaflets. They really were bad. But, you know, trial and error. But, you know, the first few instructions, and I can remember the very first call that I got to value somebody's house. And it was after about 3 weeks of leafleting. It was quite soul destroying. It was winter. My hands were cold. And it was a house over in Cowley. And I can remember having the message and ringing them from my car in Sainsbury's car park. And just being so excited that these people had had me out to value their house, or were going to have me out to value their house. And I went round there, and, you know, sitting in someone's front room who's about to sell their house, which I think was about 400,000, and saying, well, admit this, I haven't sold any other houses, you know, this, you would be my first. And they had absolute faith in me to sell their house, and we sold their house. But the type of people, probably the first 10 instructions I went, or the first 10 valuations I went out to, they all came to the market with me, or they didn't go on the market at all. And I think the reason behind it is that, but when they called me out, they knew I was a small business. They knew that we were new. So it was just a case of, did they like me when I got in their front, you know, front room on the sofa and having a chat over a cup of tea? And luckily they did. And it's just grown and grown from there. We've tried loads of different things, like Google AdWords and stuff, which didn't really work back in the day. It works more now, but it didn't work in the early days. And then probably about 6 months in, and this has been absolutely key for us, we just, when someone had moved, we just started sending out a generic email that said, how did we do? Here's a link to our Google Plus page. You know, would you be able to just write, you know, rate us, be very honest, rate us, and write a little bit about, you know, how you think your experience was. And it's amazing, because now, through recommendation and Google search, that's probably why we get called out as much as we do, because, touch wood, the majority of the reviews that we have are 5-star. And actually, I think people really do look to reviews and stuff now, whether you're, I don't know, booking a holiday or buying a tumble dryer, people do look to see what other people think. For any businesses out there that don't have a somewhere on Google where people can leave a review, I would say absolutely get one, because it's almost the first thing people see when they search your business. And even if they don't read any, just seeing it, I think sometimes is enough to think, ah, this is a genuine business that has done good things for other people.
Yeah, agreed. I think brilliant advice. And as you say, it, you know, it can take some time, and there's an element of some hard graft. There's an element of trial and error. And then, as you say, actually then building on the initial momentum, you know, using the initial customers to get referrals, using them to get testimonials and so on, can get you that traction. While you've been running it and growing it, but also to the future, one of the challenges in your industry is it can be heavily affected by the market, you know, the wider economy and so on. Have there been times when things have got particularly tough, or, you know, are you envisaging times where that might get tough, and kind of how do you cope or expect to kind of plan for that?
It's really, really hard, actually, because the market can be affected almost overnight by things that are going on in the media and that sort of thing. What I would say is, because I've done this job now for 16, 17 years, the market is always going to have hurdles and ups and downs. And I think that the key thing is not to panic, you know, except that there are going to be months when you're not going to sell as many houses as other months. You're not going to do as well. But I think for us, certainly, as long as you keep those core values, you know, you were saying about the photos and stuff earlier, our photos and floor plans and details are excellent, but other agents are as well. So if you're service is what makes you different, people will always come back to you and they will always recommend you. So although there might be a lower volume of people moving, people still need to move for the reasons I mentioned earlier. You know, it might be separation or anything like that, or having to upsize. But I think if you keep that service level high, when those people do need to make a move, you're the person that they're going to come to. And don't get me wrong, there have been, you know, months where I've sat in the office and I've looked at our pipeline and I've gone, okay, so we can run for another 2 months, you know, and then it picks up. And it always does. We've recently started to diversify a little bit as well. So 2 years ago, we went into lettings. And again, that's been really tricky to get off the ground. But now we have a good level of let units. And what's really nice about that is there is a consistent income. So you do know what you're getting from lettings month in, month out. And anything on top of that is a bonus. So I would say if there's anything in someone's business where they can have that retained income coming in month after month, that's really key as well. I know not all businesses can do that, but if you can get in a position where there is something that you can sell or do, or, you know, get people on a membership or something like that, so you have got that income coming in every month if something, you know, if the market isn't in your favor at that time, I'd say is key.
Yeah, I love that advice. I think there's so much in there, and I think, you know, your point there around look at the streams of income and whether there's ways in which you can deal with deal with particular areas of the business going down. But also, I really like about the what you emphasize around the double down on the thing that makes you great. So whether in your case, making sure that the service is absolutely impeccable, or whatever it is. And it reminds me actually of a landlord business that I know, where they have rental accommodation. And I was talking to them and they said that they, whenever they're looking for property, they work really, really hard on getting the one that is like the nicest in that area and so on. And I was kind of asking them why, because it's like, well, does it attract more rent then? And it's like, well, not really. It's like, well, does it cost more and take longer to find? Oh, absolutely. So why do it? And the answer was, well, because in the bad times, when the rental market's suffering, yours will be the properties that have still got people in it.
Yeah.
And it's just, that absolutely. Is just genius, because that is a, you know, and that's someone who's been in that business for well over 20 years, possibly 30 years now, and has had very few times, and I think they can probably count it on one hand, where they've had a room that has been not filled and paid for you know, an extended period of time. And it, and that comes to, whereas of course the town that they're in with all their properties has definitely had the lulls and other landlords have struggled. And I think that that's really powerful. So I love the point there that you make around, by making sure that you really do stick out and you're not just essentially riding the wave of the industry being in a good shape, then actually you'll stack up when even when things get tough. So that's
so
really
important, to work really hard. So I think you get into a rut of, you get really busy, so you do no marketing and, you know, nothing else, and then you get quiet, so you pick up your marketing. So you're always going to have peaks and troughs. But another key piece of advice, which is really important to us, is if you can afford to do it, don't run your business to the wire. And what I mean by that is, okay, you might have a really good month and you're feeling, oh, I'm going to pay myself this month. And actually, what I find, I'm quite cautious, is that I'd rather pay myself little and make sure that there's a decent amount of money in the business to get you through those difficult times. And then, you know, the better times will come. And of course, you can afford to pay yourself more, but it just means that you're not having sleepless nights wondering, not only how are you going to pay yourself, but how are you going to pay your bills and your outgoings and that sort of thing. So I would say probably the first few years of a business is just building up, I guess, a stockpile of cash to run the business from, so you can get through the difficult times without feeling too stressed about it. I'd say is quite a key thing for us anyway.
Yeah, I love that advice. I think that's been life-changing for me in the past as well. Like the you know, we used to, when we had good times in my consulting and then later my software business, yeah, we'd take the money out, and then of course you have worse times, and then suddenly you're realizing that your personal finances weren't as good as you thought they were, and then you have times where you struggle and the business struggles, and yeah, just putting that money aside so that you've kind of got 5, 6, even 6 months of cash. That means that no matter what happens, even if the market completely dropped and you had zero revenue for a long period, actually the business could still survive and you'd still be able to cope personally. And I think it completely changes your whole approach to the business, right? You know, you're able to make longer term decisions rather than short term and so on. So no, I think that's
And then invest. And I think if you're putting your VAT in one account and your tax in the other, you know what money is actually yours, because, you know, when someone all of a sudden comes along and says, oh, we'll have 20% of that, if you've not accounted for it, that can be a massive hit, especially if you've not saved that money to one side. So I think as you go, if you can put money that's effectively not yours in a separate account, and when those bills do come, it affects you in no way whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And I think, yeah, just a bit of forward planning is something that I've certainly learned over the last few years.
Nah, that's fantastic. In fact, it reminds me, have you read the book Profit First by any chance?
Oh, I haven't actually.
Okay. The reason I ask is because a lot of the principles that you've just shared are sort of included and explained in that book. It's a great book by Mike McAlevitz. He's a great author, but certainly one of my favourite of his books would be Profit First, that does talk about things like the provisioning and putting the money aside and so on. So anyone who's listening to this saying, oh, well, good in principle, but how the hell do I do it? I highly recommend reading that book, and I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes for that. But no, that's brilliant advice, Jessica. We're unfortunately running short on time, but I do just want to ask one other question to you, which is, you know, we've talked about how you do have to work hard in any business, and particularly sometimes you have to work extra hard. How have you sort of dealt with that as it relates then to your family life and so on? Because, you know, for all business owners, you know, myself included, it's a challenge. But for the world of a state agency, you've got the additional challenge that, you know, I can get away with, you know, doing something via a call or operating some normal office hours, etc., for my software business. That's not possible for a state agency normally. So how are you kind of dealing with that? How are you making sure that you can cope when viewings, etc., come in when you're meant to be taking your little one off to nursery or you know, taking her off to the doctors or whatever? Because those are the sorts of challenges that we all face as parents.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed massively through her various stages of life.
True.
So, you know, when I first started, she went to nursery 2.5 days a week, and that was all I needed to work, and I could jiggle other things around it. My friends have just been the most amazing help, and I absolutely, in those early days, could not have had a business without those guys, and my family as well, who I'd go, you know, someone would ring and say, can I have a valuation at you know, Friday at 5, and I'd go, yeah, and put the phone down and then frantically try and find someone to look after her, because I was a single parent at the time as well. And they have just been amazing. And then just generally, she's now at school, so actually I get all my appointments done in the day. My little girl has quite a few activities after school, like dancing and bits and pieces, so we split the childcare between us and another friend of mine. So most days I can work till 6 quite easily, so I take their little children to school, and then they pick up Emily, so it kind of evens itself out, and I'm still in the office by 9:10 in the morning. And just being a bit more structured, you know, I would do appointments at any time when I first started for fear that I would lose it, whereas actually now I will say, no, I'm not going to meet you there at, you know, 5 o'clock on a Sunday, because we're closed at that time. And I think it is really important to have that work-life balance, because, as I said, when I was a single parent, I'd work till 10 o'clock at night doing paperwork, but actually now I'm married, and that doesn't suit the family life. And I think people do appreciate that, you know, people do appreciate you have a family and you need to do things. So we don't compromise on appointments, and we will do appointments from, as I said, 9:15 till sort of 7 in the evening. But it does get to a point where now we're not afraid to say no on a Sunday, and actually people will just view on a Saturday or a Monday or later on in the evening if they want to see a house enough. So I think you need to be flexible, but don't be afraid to say no, because family, you know, Emily is why I do it, and my family is why I do it. So I have to allocate them enough time as well, to be honest.
Brilliant. Well, what a great message for us to end on for this podcast for parentpreneurs. So thank you so much for your time today, Jessica. It's been amazing talking to you, and really, really appreciate you sharing the stories and the lessons learned throughout your journey, and how you've been able to manage that alongside. I'll make sure that we share a link to all the resources mentioned in the podcast, including a link to your estate agent business. How else should people reach out or learn more about what you do and the ethos of your business and so on?
So our website, we've just updated it, and it really does reflect us as a business, which is amelisonline.co.uk. We're on LinkedIn and all the normal sort of social media, but our website really does, I hope, reflect how we work, and there's loads of testimonials and stuff on there. Obviously people can ring us. Our number is 01865 910 350, and all our other contact details can be found on the website.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much again, Jessica, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. Have a great day. Take care.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.